For more information on ancient dragon Zen Gate and Taigen's teachings, please visit our website at www.ancientdragon.org. Our teachings are offered to the community through the generosity of our supporters. To make a donation online, please click on the link for Just Give on our website.
Happy Thanksgiving. And welcome to the newcomers, and thank you to whoever Bodhisattva provided these lozenges. I have a little bit of a throat issue today. So my name is Gyoshin Laurel, and Taigen has been out of town for the last couple of weeks, having both professional and personal adventures. He'll be back tomorrow. But he asked me to give the talk today. And it's really the third in a series of talks. We didn't plan it that way, but some kind of synchronicity with the American Thanksgiving holiday. Last week, Aishin talked about the role of the Tenzo. She's our Tenzo, which is our head cook for our Sangha. And Monday evening, Yozan talked about an appropriate response to the holiday, to enjoy the holiday, but not to abuse them. And the relationship between thankfulness and thinking, and he made this delightful discovery that the word think and the word thank are etymologically related. So if you did not hear these two talks, I recommend them. I think they'll eventually be on our website. And there'll be some overlap with this talk, but Taigen says that repetition is the way we learn, so I'm not going to apologize for that. But I am going to focus on gratitude and generosity in its relationship to Thanksgiving, and I'm going to begin by drawing on the same text that both Aishin and Yozan used, which is Dogen's text, the Ehe Shinji, which contains directions for how to live together in community, in the monastery community that he established. So it has very specific instructions for meal practice and other practices in the Sangha. And in many ways, we adhere to those practices in our ancient dragon Zen Gate temple. So kind of focus a little bit to start with on meal practice. Many families say a blessing at their Thanksgiving meal, even if they don't do that otherwise. And we do during our Zen retreats. We have very formal meal practice, particularly at lunchtime. And we do chanting. If you're interested in the complete, I'm just going to touch on a small part of it. But if you're interested in seeing that, our chant books have the complete service, and also it's on our website. So before our meal is served, we all chant. Now we set out Buddha's own bowls. May we, with all living things, realize the emptiness of the three wheels, giver, receiver, and gift. I've always really, really liked it that we put ourselves in the company of all living things that as we prepare to eat. And that's mostly what I want to talk about today. Our relationship to all living things. Norman Fisher, who some of you may have met, he visited here and was one of our speakers a couple of years ago. He's a poet and a Zen teacher. Here's what he had to say about this part of the meal service. Zen practitioners chant these words before eating a meal. They remind us that the food about to be eaten has not been earned, it's a gift. But this gift is not to be understood in the usual way. The emptiness of the three wheels means that this giving isn't a beneficent act one performs for another, an act you can take credit for or feel worthy or unworthy of. A Zen practitioner about to eat a meal remembers that giving is life, that everything is giving and everything is given. There are no separate givers, receivers, or gifts. All of life is always giving and receiving at the same time. This is our practice and our joy. So we practice giving, both receiving and giving gifts, in the spirit. So this is the way I'd like to think about gratitude and generosity as the expressions of our connection to the rest of the universe, and reminders that we're always giving and receiving, but also how we might consider how we might become a gift, that we might live as a gift. In Faces of Compassion, which is, I think it's Tigan's most popular book, he makes the point, giving is a function and response of gratitude. When we receive and experience generosity, or when we simply appreciate with gratefulness the wonder and mystery of being alive, we are moved to acts of generosity ourselves, to give as the natural function of appreciating others, while seeing ourselves as intimately interconnected with others, is generosity practiced within the sense of wonder and gratitude for our ordinary life just as it is. The gift itself is understood as ephemeral, fleeting, empty, as it flows in benefit to many beings. The gift is passed along in the chain of interconnected being so that everyone benefits. So I think typically we think of gratitude as feeling appreciative for something or about something. And then we think of gratitude sometimes to something. Some people might be gratitude to God. It could be parents or a friend. And thinking about this way of thinking of it could encourage us to think about separation. We are grateful for it and to it. And I think I would like to think about gratitude more as reinforcing our and acknowledging our connection to others. So I'm going to go to another Buddhist, Ralph Waldo Emerson, who talks about cultivating the habit of being grateful for every good thing that comes to you and giving thanks continuously, because all things have contributed to your advancement. You should include all things in your gratitude. So I was thinking about what it might mean to give thanks continuously. That could really be a way of practicing. Yesterday I was experimenting with the practice of inhaling, consider gratitude, exhaling, consider generosity. During my sitting, and I can't say that I succeeded in doing it continuously all day long, but I can say that you could do worse as a practice. That was an interesting feeling, a set of feelings that engendered in me. So most religions, I suppose all religions, consider gratitude and generosity to have a high moral value and something that we should cultivate. And I'm going to go back now to our meal practice. So one way to cultivate them is to formalize our expression. And so in our meal chants, we do that. So after our food is served, but before we eat, we chant these five contemplations. We reflect on the effort that brought us this food and consider how it comes to us. We reflect on our virtue and practice and whether we are worthy of this offering. We regard it as essential to keep the mind free from excesses such as greed. We regard this food as good medicine to sustain our life. For the sake of enlightenment, we now receive this food. So for me, there's really great value in calling out these thoughts. Our culture of fast food, we don't pay that much attention often when we're eating. We sort of eat and go on to the next thing. And I find that this formal, beautiful ceremony forces us to realize that eating is really a sacred act. We're sustaining our life, and we're also taking lives. So you're sort of thinking backwards from our servers of our food, our cooks, the beings that made the ingredients, the farmers, the shopkeepers, the plants and animals, and so forth. So this formal acknowledgement of all of this in a serious atmosphere, it's a little bit life-changing. I found that it partially, at least, transfers to meals outside of Sesshin. So I'm going to come back to these contemplations, but I'm going to make a big digression now. Because I think that Thanksgiving is also a time for us to consider the peoples who lived on this continent before European settlement. I mean, that's the origin of this holiday, is this supposed event between Native Americans and the pilgrims celebrating together. And I'm not going to dwell on the 500 years of injustice that's happened in our history, but I want to look to the future. I recently read this wonderful essay by a woman named Robin Kimmerer. She's a Potawatomi woman, and she's a botanist. She's a scholar and professor of environmental biology at SUNY. And if you don't know her work, if you never heard of her, I recommend her book called Gathering Moss, which was published in 2005. And it's amazing what we can learn from studying moss, what we can learn about ourselves from studying moss. She has a new book that I haven't read yet, but it's called Braiding Sweetgrass, Indigenous Wisdom, Scientific Knowledge, and the Teachings of Plants. Anyway, this essay that I want to talk about today is called Returning the Gift. And she is really discussing the need for generosity and gratitude in our relationship with the earth. I'm only gonna read a little bit. I could read more. She's a wonderful writer. If you're at all interested, I'm happy to share more information about her. Let me just read the first three paragraphs of this essay. We are showered every day with the gifts of the earth, gifts we have neither earned nor paid for. That's what Norman Fisher said too. Air to breathe, nurturing rain, black soil, berries and honeybees, the tree that became this page, a bag of rice, I think she's talking about wild rice there, and the exuberance of a field of goldenrod and asters at full bloom. My economics colleagues speak of these everyday miracles as natural resources, as if they were our property, just waiting to be transformed. In the ecological sciences, we call them ecosystem services, as if they were the inevitable outcomes of the ongoing function of the ecological machine. But to me, simply as a human person, filling my basket with berries and my belly with pie, they feel like gifts bestowed by the other beings whose lives throb around us. Though we live in a world made of gifts, we find ourselves harnessed to institutions and an economy that relentlessly asks, what more can we take from the earth? This worldview of unbridled exploitation is, to my mind, the greatest threat to the life that surrounds us. Even our definitions of sustainability revolve around trying to find the formula to ensure that we can keep on taking far into the future. Isn't the question we need, What does the earth ask of us? So that's the question. What does the earth ask of us? It's interesting the way she asks it, because when she asks it, she sort of gives the earth sentience. You know, the earth is able to ask this question. And at the same time, she's sort of acknowledging the earth's vulnerability and need for us to do something. We don't know what. She says, "We are honored by the request. It shows we belong. But it makes us not just passive receiver of gifts, but active participants in a real relationship," which I really am attracted to that idea. And she explicitly credits this view to her Potawatomi ancestors, who, she says, taught her that the job of a human person is to learn, what can I give in return for the gifts of the earth? But since she's a biologist, she also says, she has the perspective that for the earth to stay in balance and the gifts to continue to flow, we have to give back for what we are given. So she calls this the covenant of reciprocity, and it certainly is what you learn in Ecology 101, that energy doesn't go one way or else you're in big trouble. So what we have to offer in return, she says, is gratitude. And the reason she says that's powerful is because it's transformative to acknowledge this relationship of giver and receiver. And again, she's not talking as a psychologist, she's talking as a biologist, because she says living with gratitude gives us evolutionary advantage. This human emotion has adaptive value because it engenders practical outcomes for sustainability. It can, in a very real way, lead to the practice of self-restraint, of taking only what you need, a sense of satisfaction, a feeling of enoughness. Practicing contentment is a radical act in a consumption-driven society. So she asks us to think about, back to the question, you know, what does the earth ask of us? And she talks about the kinds of things that other non-human persons, as she refers to them, provide to the earth that the earth is grateful for. And she talks about pollinators and nitrogen fixers. You know, nitrogen fixers have these little bacteria on the roots of legumes that take nitrogen out of the air and turn it into food for plants. Seed dispersers, photosynthesizers, these are all, you know, parts of the web of living that has a function and offer a gift to the whole. And so we're left with this question, so what does the earth ask of us? The answer isn't obvious, and she doesn't exactly provide an answer, but she does provide advice on how to approach that question, and her advice is basically to pay attention. And her observation is most of the time we're really not paying attention with that kind of question in mind. And we should use our senses, we should use our intellect, we should use our feelings and notice how we can change our actions so that that we are being more of a gift to the earth than just a taker. Being a taker is okay, but being just a taker is not okay. So her recommendation is to start from gratitude, which leads to awareness and compassion, and ultimately to an ethic of respect and reciprocity, and an understanding that in a finite world, you cannot endlessly take without replenishment. And here are some of the specific suggestions she makes. How can we reciprocate the gifts of the earth in gratitude, in ceremony, through acts of practical reverence and land stewardship, In fierce defense of the beings and places we love, in art, in science, in song, in gardens, in children, in ballots, in stories of renewal, in creative resistance, in how we spend our money and our precious lives, by refusing to be complicit with the forces of ecological destruction, in healing, we can be medicine for the earth. So this brings me back to those five contemplations that that I read earlier. And as I was reading her words, I thought, you know, if we took these five contemplations seriously, it would go a long way to accomplishing what she's recommending, and we would be less destructive and more in harmony with the other non-human people that we live with. So I'm going to read them again with that in mind. We reflect on the effort that brought us this food and consider how it comes to us. We reflect on our virtue and practice and whether we're worthy of this offering. We regard it as essential to keep the mind free from excesses such as greed. We regard this food as good medicine to sustain our life. For the sake of enlightenment, we now receive this food. They're very beautiful, aren't they? I'm going to end by reading a poem by someone who is the favorite poet of pretty much everyone I know these days. Anyone guess who that is?
Maybe Oliver.
Yes. Yeah.
Who?
Mary Oliver.
Oh.
Is she not your favorite poet?
I like her.
Like her a lot, yes. This is called The Messenger. And I actually brought a few copies if anybody's interested. The Messenger. My work is loving the world. Here the sunflowers, there the hummingbird, equal seekers of sweetness. Here the quickening yeast, there the blue plums. Here the clam, deep in the speckled sand. Are my boots old? Is my coat torn? Am I no longer young and still not half perfect? Let me keep my mind on what matters, which is my work, which is mostly standing still and learning to be astonished. The Phoebe, the delphinium, the sheep in the pasture, and the pasture, which is mostly rejoicing since all ingredients are here, which is gratitude, to be given a mind and a heart and these body clothes, a mouth with which to give shouts of joy to the moth and the wren, to the sleepy dug-up clam, telling them all over and over how it is that we live forever. I'm going to end there. I'd be very interested in hearing any comments or questions or anything else. Ishan.
Thank you, Yoshin, for a wonderful talk. I was wondering kind of what you were going to say about, you know, what does the earth ask from us? And Your talk made me think about the difficulties sometimes we have in our culture distinguishing between a gift and a transaction. Mm. That we sometimes feel like, okay, you give me this, I give you this, but, and there's a sense of, like, you know, quid pro quo. And I feel like what you're saying kind of wakes me up to the real, just there's a more intimate quality of a gift, that's or a more touching quality, where you realize you have been given something that you can't just pay back. Mm-hmm. You know, and so what does the earth ask of us? That's maybe what makes it a gift, is that we're given so much, and then, you know, what we can pay it forward maybe by with what we do with the gift that we're given. So it just gave me something to sort of contemplate. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank
you for a wonderful talk. It's stimulated me in so many ways. And one of my questions is practical. How do I get a copy of that wonderful paper? I really like to read it.
Oh, yes. I'm happy to... you can have this copy, but I'm also happy to send out a link to it.
Oh, I would appreciate that.
It's called Returning the Gift.
Mm-hmm. There's so much to think about, and just to remember, to try to keep in mind on a daily basis, the constant giving and receiving. Thank you.
What I like about her is there doesn't seem to be a feeling of guilt. There only seems to be a feeling of responsibility, which is refreshing. At least that's the way I receive it, and that's the way I was trying to convey it. Oh, did you want to say something?
Thank you so much for your talk. It's very thought-provoking. And I realized as you were talking how none of this is possible unless we slow down, mm-hmm. unless we pay attention mm-hmm. and become aware and open up space inside. And when I'm able to do that, I'm astonished at how often gratitude just spontaneously appears in what I didn't try to make happen, that it happens. And that's a beginning step in appreciation and being aware of my actions and the giving back.
David. Say your name, you're new.
I'm David.
David, hello, welcome.
Thank you, hello. Thank you for the talk. So, once a year I go to a festival called Burning Man,
uh-huh.
which is a gift economy, and one goes and simply the act of receiving so much on a regular basis, learning to have gratitude and give back just by letting the gift be, is its own gift back, and being mindful of that. Thank you for bringing that up. It's very, very important.
Yeah, that's, I think, related to what Aishin was saying about it's really not a transaction, right?
It's tough to get away from that mindset, mm-hmm. everyday transaction, mm-hmm. when suddenly gifts come in. Can take some time to receive, and it's a wonderful feeling.
Oh, sorry. The other David.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm hearing people talk, and I'm hearing gratitude and gift, and I think the word that's missing for me is relationship. For a long time, I did Native American practice, and it was always about relationship. And when the Blackfoot people spoke in a public setting, before they spoke, they said, in the name of all our relations. And that was that they're not speaking just for themselves, but speaking for buffalo, for grass, for trees, for river, for sky, for Mother Earth. And I think that's not much even a matter of slowing down, but the awareness of being in relationship. And I could be in relationship at high speed or low speed. It's a matter of keeping that consciousness of being in relationship. And if I'm in relationship, everything is a gift. And everything, for me, is a gift back. And everything that I receive is a gift. Because I'm in relationship. And I think that's something that we lack in our Western society. We don't have that connection. We don't have that sense of gift. Many of the Plains Indians would... Native Americans would bless an animal with tobacco after they had killed it as a way for that animal to return back to the sacred fire, which was where all creation lives. And so they're honoring the gift of that animal for life, but also but in a sense the relationship, because we all go back to the sacred fire in their medicine way, in their theology. And I think that's something that I think that's also part of our practice, is to be in relationship with everything. And your talk reminds me of that, because we sometimes forget. So thank you.
And some of those relationships are not obvious. A few weeks ago, Yozan and I heard a wonderful talk about our relationship to the microorganisms that live in our body. Mm-hmm. Apparently, all of us, each of us, has like 3 pounds of tiny little bacteria and other microorganisms that help us function as animals. And we are pretty darn unaware of them. We certainly are not grateful to them. Yes, many relationships. Billions and billions of relationships.
Well, and going back to that talk, it's not only, excuse me, everybody's got a cough today. It's not only pounds, but if we do it on a sort of cell by cell, correlation, there are many more of those beings in us than there is of us.
Right.
They greatly outnumber us.
Right. And if they're not there, we're sort of stuck.
Yeah, I've heard that we actually can't live without them.
We definitely cannot live without them. The most basic things like digestion, but functioning of most of our organs, I think, are dependent on these. And that has, of course, evolved over many, many years of relationship.
I read a fascinating book by Lynn Margulis. Called Symbiotic Planet.
Yes.
And she talks about how the basic cells that comprise us are actually a symbiotic combination of two previous single-cell organisms.
Mitochondria.
Yeah.
So the energy of each cell. Yeah, they used to be their own independent beings. This discussion has gotten off into the wild blue yonder. I love it. All comments welcome. If there aren't any other comments, I'll make two other book recommendations. I didn't end up fitting either of these into the talk, but Thomas Berry is a wonderful philosopher, writer, and he has a book called Dream of the Earth, which is a wonderful book in general, but also has a really astonishingly interesting chapter called The Historical Role of the American Indian. It's not sentimental. It's just really, really insightful and interesting. So I recommend that book. And then Joanna Macy's name often comes up here. She's another philosopher, eco-philosopher, often referred to as eco-philosopher, and she has visited here, has many, many books. World as Lover, World as Self is one which talks about these kinds of ideas. So those are two books that I recommend, besides the two by Robin Kimmerer. Whenever anyone asks me, who should we get as a speaker, I always recommend Robin Kimmerer. So far, she hasn't turned up, but we'll see. Any last comments? If not, I think we'll stop and say the 4 Bodhisattva vows,
which are on the last page of the chant card.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Beings are numberless. I vow to free them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to end them.